Welcome to Watching Bloomington with your host, Barry Lesso. Each week, B97 and Hoosier Country bring you stories about nonprofit agencies helping people in our area. Stay informed, stay involved, and stay tuned.
Welcome to Watching Bloomington. Each week, we have a chance to talk with a different community leader who helps make this a better place to live. And with us this morning, we're pleased to have Tim Clower. Tim's the Assistant Director at Community Kitchen here in Bloomington. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning.
So summertime's coming, right? Right around the corner, but you are probably already in the middle of that, aren't you?
Yeah, we've already kind of started something a little different from our normal emergency meal service we do each day is during the summer months, we provide meals to kids in low-income neighborhoods, and we start the day after they get out of school, which was last Thursday, and we go all summer long until the day before they go back. Of course, for kids, unfortunately, a little different from when I was a kid, summer is a little shorter than it used to be. So it's primarily just June and July, but we've got a couple days on either end.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit. So what's involved with the food program? Like how does that work?
Well, it's a USDA program that is administered by the Department of Ed. So it kind of fits under the same umbrella that the school lunch programs fit under, but it's a little different, as you could imagine, during the summer. So basically, we follow the same nutritional guidelines and food requirements that the schools follow during the school year. But what's different is that we're going to specific lower income neighborhoods or apartment complexes, mobile home parks, places where we know, based on our communication with social workers at schools and just census data and so forth, we know there's a decent amount of at-risk kids in those areas. So there's 11 spots, 11 neighborhoods that we go to, and we distribute lunches, which are bagged lunches. We're going to incorporate some warm food sometime this summer, which I'll get to a little bit later. But basically, there are five components. So we provide milk each day. We'll have two fruits or vegetables each day, a grain component, which is usually bread or in a wrap or crackers or that type of thing. And then also a protein, of course. So we round those out. With the pandemic, there were some waivers that the USDA put out. Normally, we would have to throw down a blanket and hang out and observe the kids eating the meals in order to claim them. So we get some reimbursement for meals that we serve. But with the pandemic, there's a waiver. So we actually are able to just distribute the meals to the kids themselves or to parents that have kids at home. So we go to, 11 different spots. We have two routes. One has six, one has five. We're at each spot for about 15 to 20 minutes. The kids especially kind of get used to when we're going to be there, and oftentimes are there waiting for us when we get there. But that's how the program works and what we've been up to so far.
Now, I would imagine doing the transportation, that probably has to take additional staff time, and then you have probably added expenses, especially with gas prices right now.
Yeah, the reimbursement really, it's a good boost to the program in our thinking. Anytime we get financial support like that, we try to see how much further we can extend it, how many more kids we can reach. It's the cost of the meals. Everything is purchased from distributors, so we can't kind of depend on the food bank and other normal food resources that we have for our regular food programs, because with kids being the most at risk, we have to make sure that everything is healthy and fresh. It also allows us to incorporate some fruits, for example, and some vegetables that kids may not have had the opportunity to try. The way I kind of look at it is it's, and this is from a kid who didn't eat turnips and had to sit at the table until I ate my turnips. We want to nudge them to just expand their minds and understand what other foods are out there. Things like kiwi or mango, things that kids wouldn't normally get to try. It's an opportunity to do that. And, kind of just, we're not trying to force them that, eat new things like some of us had to go through. I do, speaking from experience, now, of course, I do like turnips, that it does have an impact and, that kids may actually find a favorite food or something that they really like, and just recognize that, chips aren't maybe the healthiest thing and some of the other foods. I mean, the foods that the guidelines we follow call for whole grains and, fresh vegetables and that type of thing. So,
Well, if you've, like you said, if you've never been exposed to a particular fruit or vegetable, you may never have thought about trying it.
Right.
Yeah. And some of those things do look rather odd on the outside. So,
yes. Yeah. Kids are, and I think kids get a little bit of a bad rap in that, they're known to be finicky and not like certain things, but the reality is they're more apt to try something, especially if other kids eat it or are trying it. That might be because they're young and they haven't,
don't know any better yet.
But it definitely is. I think it's a cool experience. And we did last year, we made a little passport with, different pages for fruits and vegetables with a little bit about where it's grown and, harvested and little facts about each fruit or vegetable. And then they could, check off whether they liked it or they didn't like it. And it was,
that's a great idea.
Yeah. And I was getting some of those back was interesting because kids aren't necessarily, trends come and go, but kids often like things you would be surprised that they're actually into. So.
Yeah. No cicadas on the menu, I'm imagining.
No, we're not going to go. I don't know. Are there any left? I think my dog has eaten most of the cicadas in my neighborhood. But yeah, we've joked about that, but.
No, you see some very high-end restaurants are serving cicada dishes. I'm like, I'm not quite that open. I'm not going to do that on my passport either yet. But,
yeah.
So about how many kids do you usually serve in your program? It's quite a few, it sounds like.
Yeah, with the things are just kind of ramping up since we started last Thursday. So, so far we've been doing close to 100 on each route, somewhere between 75 and 100. Yes, Monday being Memorial Day yesterday, things were a little bit down. But again, that was just the third day. Takes a little while for word to get out. A lot of the folks and families that we serve on these routes aren't, online or looking at the paper or, they don't necessarily get the word the way we would. However, in apartment complexes from other kids, the word kind of does get around. So once we get going for the summer, we'll be serving somewhere probably between 200 and 250 on the routes. And then we also provide meals for lunches for Crestmont Boys and Girls Club and the Lincoln Street Boys and Girls Club. We provide a breakfast and a snack. And then the Rise, which is part of Middleway's transitional housing facility, we provide lunches for those kids as well. So we've got, other meals. Adding it all up, it winds up being closer to 400 to 500 meals a day.
Wow.
Which is a fairly big production. So,
yeah. And that's on top of the regular meal services that you do.
In the morning, we prepare the meals from 7:30 to 9:30, bag them up or, or heat them up, as we'll be doing down the road. While that's happening, we're already doing Head Start lunches for the Head Start programs in Bloomington. And then shortly after they're done, about 11:30, our group comes in, volunteers and staff, to prepare the evening's meal. So it's a good utilization of our kitchen all day.
I was going to say, yeah, it doesn't sound like there's much downtime.
Yeah, it's definitely, things are happening here until about 7 p.m., 7 a.m., 7 p.m. So.
Wow. Now, it sounds like with all that, with the summer program revving up, are there opportunities for people to volunteer? And I know things were a little bit different during the thick of the pandemic, but talk about that a little bit, if you don't mind.
Yeah, so for the specific summer program, we have two shifts. We have volunteers that can come in from 7:30 to 9:30, and that's to put together the meals and do some of the prep. A lot of that has to do with making sandwiches. There's a lot of bagging all the meals up, and then doing some of the prep, you know, cutting up carrot sticks and celery and that type of thing for the sides. Just kind of getting things organized and in coolers and ready to go out on the routes. The second part of that are going as a ride along on the routes. We have the two routes that go out. The volunteers get here about 10 a.m. and then you'll return about 1 p.m. So it's kind of over the lunch period, but it's, you know, like I said, it goes fairly quick because we're at each stop for about 15 minutes. We do have the option, people can ride with our staff. At this time, all of our staff are vaccinated. And we just basically kind of pulled back on the mask policy as far as just volunteers that aren't serving people. But because we're in vehicles and in close proximity, and because we're going out and serving kids, we do wear masks while we're in the process of those things. However, if someone wanted to volunteer, wasn't comfortable riding in the van with staff, they can drive separately and meet us at each stop. But we're just requiring that people are, you know, masked up when we're serving the kids.
Sure.
There's just still unknown factors about, you know, the COVID, and we just want to err on the safe side. Again, because not only kids, but adults that we serve, the strong assumption is that they're more at risk. Kids especially, they have the least control, and they're more at risk of being hungry. In the U.S. currently, only about a quarter of the kids that get free or reduced breakfast or lunch at school have access to that during the summer. So that's the main emphasis on why we do this program, is so those kids have access. I think in Bloomington, that percentage has got to be quite a bit higher between us and the camps and other things that are available, the resources for families and kids. It's probably not quite that low, but across the country, once you get into rural areas, especially, it's hard for kids to get access to nutritional food.
Oh, absolutely. And especially balanced meals the way you provide too, that are so carefully designed to provide the correct nutrition.
Yeah. And so the only other change right now, as I mentioned earlier, is the waiver. So families can come and get the meals and just take them home. They have, you know, which is, I really like the fact that the waiver is there. I wish it was that way all of the time.
Because, oh, yeah.
You know, I've seen situations where there's grandma watching her two grandkids and the two neighbor kids, and, you know, two of them are asleep and one of them's naked, and they, you know, for her to drag all of them out to the vehicle to get food is a challenge. So, you know, if her and one of the kids are, you know, we're right there. So it's very quick for people to be able to come out and grab the food.
Sure. Oh yeah. And otherwise it would extend your route considerably, I would think too. So,
yeah. I mean, that's that's the, it's called the congregate rule. And that's mm-hmm. that we have to observe the kids eating. And mm-hmm. the challenging part with that rule is that, you know, you have the five components of a meal that I mentioned, and especially with little kids, yeah. try to get them to eat that in 15 or 20 minutes is tough.
Yep.
They get distracted. They, mm-hmm. you know, they're just little kids, you know, so
right,
it's,
exactly.
it's kind of tough.
It takes longer to chew. So if somebody's, you know, listening and they're interested in volunteering either for one of the food prep shifts or the delivery shifts, what's the best way for them to reach out? Online or call or, yeah.
Yeah, the best thing to do is to call. Our volunteer coordinator, June, mm-hmm. signs people up for shifts. As I mentioned, we have the two summer shifts, the 7:30 to 9:30, and then the ride along, which is the 10 a.m. until 1 p.m. Mm-hmm. People can sign up for one and try it out. People can sign up, you know, to do it once a week, once a day, whatever, you know, works for them. We do have other shifts available, which she can kind of fill people in on. We tend to get kind of a regular group of volunteers during the summer. Mm-hmm. There's people that come back each year. And I would say, not that our other volunteer shifts aren't, you know, don't make you feel good and aren't positive things, but there's something about going out and feeding kids and seeing mm-hmm. kids sitting together and getting a meal. And, you know, it's not something, because it's anonymous and we don't require mm-hmm. any type of, you know, paperwork or anything for families or kids to get meals. We also want to protect their privacy. So we don't mm-hmm. take photos or, you know, do stories right. on specific people. Mm-hmm. But just from my experience, I've just had so many moving moments mm-hmm. with kids just being really appreciative, mm-hmm. Kids being thankful. We had a kid on the second day last Friday that was just kind of in shock that there was somebody that was showing up in his neighborhood and going to bring free meals every day.
Wow.
During the week. And, you know, when he already had thanked us for the meal, but he got about a half block away and came back and made a point to say thank you again. It's like,
aww.
Been taught well to make sure he's, you know, yeah. shows appreciation. But the overwhelming response is pretty positive from the mm-hmm. kids and their families. You know, there's a good chance they may open the bag and see broccoli and not be super psyched about that. But you know, the other things and the consistency of it really make mm-hmm. a difference. And one of the additional things we'll do this summer as well is starting next week. We have a program during the school year called Backpack Buddies, where mm-hmm. we provide a bag of food to supplement a family's food over the weekend. And we're going to roll that into the summer program. And on Fridays, we're going to be distributing those backpack bags. They're actually biodegradable bags of food. And that's a boost for during the weekend. Mm-hmm. So it has, mm-hmm. you know, things like mac and cheese and tuna and pouch chicken and soups and, easy to fix things, granola bars, mm-hmm. cereal, so that it gives a little support to the kids mm-hmm. and their families over the weekend.
That's a lot of food. So, you know, when you're talking about all that, I'm assuming too, if you are your listeners, you know, are there food donations that you're looking for to support either the lunch or the Backpack Buddies program? What kind of items, you know, can people drop off to help out?
Yeah, probably the primary place is with the backpack type of food.
Mm-hmm.
That's the easiest thing I think for people mm-hmm. to support us with. And those are things like I mentioned, canned or pouched chicken or tuna,
mm-hmm.
protein, peanut butter, granola bars, cereal, mac and cheese, or any of those kind of instant pasta or rice dishes that mm-hmm. people can add things to. Those are all good things because we have so many meals to do. And we have to keep them consistent. You know, for example, like the juices we provide for the kids and the lunches have to be 100% juice and a certain size. Mm-hmm. And it gets a little complicated.
Yeah, the regulations that you have to follow.
Yeah. So we purchase that stuff in bulk to get the best deals. But so supporting us with the backpack type of food or with gift cards, that way we can get specific things we might need. Mm-hmm. As part of civil rights, a lot of allergies, for example, if a child is lactose intolerant, mm-hmm. that's now considered a disability. So we have to provide an alternative to the milk. So we purchase almond milk and milk and some other things that we can provide alternatives for those kids. Mm-hmm. So there's things that pop up that, you know, we have to dash out and get to make sure things are covered.
So you have to track all that too. So you have to know for exceptions like that, what goes into that meal.
Well, since it's a USDA program, I mean, I've got a sheet that has numbers for each meal, for each place, for each day.
Wow.
I have to check those out, check those off as we serve them. Mm. And the staff have to, of course, date and sign everything and total it up and then move on to the next site. We check the temperatures at each spot. You know, we just have to, whenever you say something like USDA, that, you know, means that there's going to be a paper trail. And to me, you know, all the paperwork and stuff involved in the 2 months that we do the program is by far worth it. Just to be able to provide the meals. And, you know, families are currently riding the wave a little bit because of the increase in SNAP benefits and unemployment and stimulus and some of those things that are out there. But those things are, I think, fairly quickly going to fade as things go back to somewhat normal. So we're kind of planning on continuing to provide these meals and probably see an increase as we get into the late summer and fall.
No, it sounds like it. So you've been great giving a list of food items. And if people want to volunteer, they can call June at 812-332-0999. Right. But also the fact that you have to purchase gas and, of course, purchase food for this program. If people are able and interested in donating, what's the best way for them to do that?
They can go online to our website, MonroeCommunityKitchen.com. And there's a place there where they can make donations online if they'd like to with a credit card. But our mailing address is P.O. Box 3286, Bloomington 47402. They can send checks to that post office box. And then, as I mentioned, you know, gift cards, people can also drop off donations here anytime between 8 a.m. and 6 p.m. They pull around to the back of our building during the day and ring the doorbell. Someone will help them, whether they have food donations or any type of financial support donation.
Wonderful. And also, you participate with Kroger in the grocery card program also. And that's another way somebody could help.
Yeah, the Kroger Rewards program. I do it. It's very easy to do. You actually, as an individual shopper, it doesn't really change anything other than whenever you make purchases, you know, they ask you for that number or you put in that number. A lot of people are already doing it, but you can go online and to the Kroger Rewards website and actually designate a certain nonprofit you'd like to support, in this case, Community Kitchen. And we get over $1,000 a month. I mean, every little bit adds up.
Yep.
And it's, you know, I don't know what my specific part of that is, but I think it's a, I don't even have to think about it. It's an easy contribution. You're not rounding up or adding to what you're spending. It's just, you know, Kroger's actually generosity and, you know, based on what you spend making a donation. It's a great way to, you know, just do some support if you're not able to do something otherwise.
Mm-hmm. No, that sounds great. And with the things kind of, as you had said before, we'll put going back to quote normal in quotes, what are you seeing, you know, as you're going into the summer months, any other impact on your programming and staff and anything else that you're seeing moving forward?
Well, we're still in, as far as our regular feeding program, our dinner program, we serve from 4 to 6. We're currently still doing carry out at our main location here. We already have 2 existing carry out locations on West 11th Street, Community Kitchen Express, and then also in Ellettsville, we have a site at 102 South Park, the old township trustee office right by the little park in Ellettsville. And we've been serving dinner at all 3 locations from 4 to 6. However, right now it's just carry out meals, either reheatable meals in a recycled or recyclable foil container, or we have biodegradable food containers that we serve warm meals in. We're hoping to get back to having our dining room open in the coming weeks. Right now, we're getting ready to have a shot clinic here at the kitchen through IU Health. A lot of our patrons have stated that they've already received the vaccine and so forth. But once we feel like the scale is kind of tipped and a lot of those folks being vaccinated, we will most likely still the volunteers serving and asking people to wear masks. But you know, the dining room here at our main location is, it's also a big social place for people to interact and hang out. And, you know, for the past year and a half or so, people have been eating outside or taking meals home or taking them to the park. And it's just, you know, it'd be nice to be able to provide the ability for people to sit and congregate and enjoy each other.
Absolutely.
So we're looking forward to that. And it's been a wild ride, like a lot of places. I think we were fortunate in the community support that we've gotten over the past year and a half that we're able to adapt where some of our programs, either like kids programs, closed or their numbers dropped. And then we kind of put our energy into doing meals for like hotels for the homeless and the quarantine shelter, and Area 10 or Meals on Wheels had a waiting list. And we put our efforts in helping meet those needs for people that were homebound or that didn't want to come out publicly because they were at risk. So we transitioned. And I think over the course of the year, we were only down from the previous year about 20%.
Wow.
A little under that. So we definitely were still able to reach a lot of people. And now, as I mentioned earlier, I mean, things I think are going to just kind of gradually ramp back up. And unfortunately, there's going to be a lot of people kind of left with some big challenges ahead. It's hard to really know the impact, even at this point. I think it's going to be down the road where we see how much this has really affected our country.
Yeah, I think, unfortunately, you're going to be busy.
Yeah.
Well, Tim, thank you so much for taking time out of what I know is a super busy schedule to be with us this morning. And thanks to you and all the staff for all that you're doing for the community. And great to see you.
My pleasure. Great to see you too, Denise. Take care.
Yeah. Well, this has been another edition of Watching Bloomington, and we'll see you again next week.
You've been listening to Watching Bloomington with Barry Lesso, brought to you by Carl Lamb, attorney at law. For 37 years, Carl Lamb has been a premier attorney in South Central Indiana, helping his clients through extremely difficult times, drawing on his experience, reputation, and responsiveness. For a free initial consultation, call Carl Lamb today at 812-332-1420. Want more? Listen to full episodes on our website at whcc105.com and wbwb.com. Come.